From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, the number to call is 800-462-7413. Of course, along with your calls, some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Yes, we're going to talk about hand dryers in bathrooms and what they have to offer you, something that you're not expecting at all.
Dry my hands anyway.
Cell phone radiation. Is there collusion to prevent us from really understanding the truth about cell phones, our ears, and the potential for danger to our brains?
This one's been around for a while.
Been around for a while. And is it like radiation and television, which my mother said, don't sit close to the TV, you'll become radioactive. We'll talk about this.
Okay, and our recipe.
Persimmon arugula salad. Now, if you can spell persimmon, you can eat this salad, and you might actually like it.
Well, I guess that leaves me out. Let's go to the phones. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, our first caller with us in Toronto, Ontario. Hi.
Hi, guys. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Do we hear a car?
Yeah, I'm on my way to an appointment right now.
Well, you be careful you don't smash your car while we're talking. So that's the most important thing. So what's interest you? Tell me what your call's about.
Well, I wanted to ask about a problem I've been having for a while. I have these leg cramps, and it's both legs, depends which one. It's never both at the same time, on my calf, and it only happens when I'm coming out of They're quite painful. It lasts for about, I'd say 30 seconds. It feels way longer because the pain is really, really bad. And I just don't really know, like, what I could do for relief.
Does it wake you up in the middle of the night? Is that what, does it actually wake you up, or is it when you normally get up?
It's just when I'm waking up myself. Like, just as I'm coming out of sleep, I can feel it creeping. Sometimes I'll, like, flex the muscle to try and prevent it from coming on. And rarely that actually does work a little bit and eases the pain, but it just comes on, like, just as I'm waking up myself.
Oh, wow. That must be really bad. Tell me, you on any medications at all, any medicines you take?
No, none at all. I don't even take birth control because my doctor initially was asking me, I guess, you know, the infamous leg blood clot with, you know, the contraceptive pill. But I don't take anything.
Right. Blood clots are different. I mean, the leg cramps you have are not due to deep vein thrombosis of a blood clot. There is a risk of that with birth control pills, especially for women who smoke, if they smoke. Do you smoke at all? Smoke cigarettes?
Yeah, I do. Okay. I really do want to quit, though.
Okay. So, and that actually is part of it. So there's a reason behind this. Smoking actually has something to do with the vasculature of the body. Smoking has been involved with back pain, leg cramps, leg pain, and joint pain. And we don't quite understand why. So we know that's one issue. So my first thought is, this is a good time to quit smoking. You've got leg cramps. It may be a side effect from smoking. That may be the whole thing. You don't want leg cramps for the rest of your life. I'm going to tell you how to deal with them. But the reality is smoking might be an issue, and that might motivate you. It takes the average smoker 4 times to quit using drugs such as Chantix or bupropion under the name Zyban, or using any one of the nicotine replacements such as the patch or the gum or the inhaler can make a difference. And if you haven't tried, try again. Can really make a difference. How much is a pack of cigarettes in Toronto now?
$13 for one pack of cigarettes.
$13
yesterday.
And you smoke.
How much
a day do you smoke? A pack a day, half a pack. How much do you smoke a day?
A pack usually lasts me about 4 days.
For about 4 days. So that only is about $2,800 to $3,000 of your salary. Not bad. You get a $3,000 raise the day you quit smoking. You get a $3,000 raise. You know, you could actually come and visit someplace in the U.S. if you want to, or the Caribbean. You could go to Hawaii and the money you save on those cigarettes. Anyway, quitting smoking can be an issue. Another thing that I would recommend is go to the web, Google Achilles tendon stretches. Achilles tendon stretches. Those are stretches in the lower ankle. And they often, if you do them, they will often help reduce the leg cramps that you have at night. They're great stretches that you do before you go to sleep. I would try that. That's number one. Number two, bed covers. If they're lighter, they're less likely to cause cramps. If they're heavier and they push on your feet, if they're really tight on the bed, they're more likely to cause cramps. And number three, if that fails, try vitamin E 400 international units. It's an old folk remedy that helps other people. They take it at bedtime. That's what I would try.
Okay, yeah, for sure.
The smoking is going to save you money, too. So you just think about that when you go to that appointment today, okay?
For sure, I will. Thank you.
Yeah,
thanks for your
drive
call.
Carefully.
Yeah, drive carefully. You got it.
Always.
800-462-7413.
You know, we're not supposed to be talking and driving in the car. I mean, I've discovered when I talk and I drive, I'm really careful. I pay attention to things. But if I'm on a highway sometimes, I'll miss the exit because I'm talking and I'm not thinking about it. Nobody knows exactly why. You can talk in the car and you don't somehow miss the exit. And you've got verbal cues and you're talking to somebody and you're looking at them. But when you're on the phone, your mind is in a different, it's in a different spot. So I think if people talk on the phone, and I am one of those people, you have to pay super attention to the driving while you're doing it.
800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, before our next call, for some reason we're talking about hand dryers. What's going on?
It's fascinating. This is a fascinating study. So when you're in public bathrooms, use the towels or the hand dryers?
Well, you don't always have a choice.
That's right. You don't always have a choice. And the old hand dryers are kind of starting out. They're kind of slow.
Yeah.
They're hot. And they take like 5 to 10 minutes to dry your hands. They seem like they take forever. And then Dyson make the vacuum cleaners. One of the first things they made, actually, I think before vacuum cleaners at the time, were hand dryers.
Yeah. I think if I have a choice, I use the towel.
Yeah. Well, the hand dryers now blow the stuff off your hands. In other words, that's the way they actually work. They may warm your hands.
Yeah.
But they actually blow. And the new hand dryers are dynamite because they do it much faster. And I've gone to hand dryers because the new ones are really good. Well, this study looked at what actually is occurring in the hand dryers. And, you know, when you flush the toilet, you're supposed to close the lid. But, you know, in those public bathrooms, there actually is not a lid on most of those toilets.
No.
And it turns out there's something called the toilet plume. And the toilet plume are microscopic particles of human waste that are propelled into the air when you flush the toilet. Isn't this an appetizing discussion about what's going on in life? So anyway, a study published in the Journal of Applied and Environmental Microbiology had a team from the University of Connecticut which assessed hand dryers in men's and women's bathrooms on three separate areas. They used plates to collect the bacteria emitted by hand dryers, and the results will undoubtedly shock you, Tom. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
The plates, these are just plates that are exposed in the air. It's not on their
hands. Okay, all right.
We're exposed to a hand dryer, so they're right around there, for 30 seconds. And approximately 18 to 60 colonies of bacteria were found on the plates at the end of the hand drying experience. In other words, there are colonies on the plates.
That's different than just being in the bathroom
In the bathroom, when they had other plates in the bathroom, there were also some colonies on the plates.
Yeah.
But when you're drying your hands, you're also taking the bacterial plume from the poop that was flushed down the toilet that is now being redistributed in the air onto your hands. You know what this means?
See the radios turning off throughout the
this
country and beyond.
This means when you go to the airport in a public place, stay away from the bathrooms. I suggest hold it in as long as you can until you get home. And if you've got some urinary incontinence issues, it's your problem because when you walk into there, they are cesspools of bacterial plumes. I think there's another issue to take back from this. The other issue is that we're actually surrounded by bacteria like this all the time. And even though they found 15 to 20 bacterial colonies on the plates, that doesn't mean your body can't handle it. Your body can handle it unless you're someone who has a specific problem, you know, with immunocompetence. Mm-hmm. But the reality is hair dryers, you know, if you go into the toilet, they didn't do plates just on the toilet to see what it's like with people on the toilet. But the things that push the the water off of your hands are also redistributing some of the air and the bacterial plume in the washroom. And I know that's, I know that that makes you nice and warm and fuzzy when you
Isn't it
there.
Amazing the things that you find out here on Zorba Pastor?
Yes, it is. It is. This is one of the highlights of the show. We tell you things that no one else bothers to discuss on other radio shows.
800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba, a listener with us in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Oh, thanks
Thank
a lot.
You.
How
Thank
can
you.
We help?
Well, we eat really healthy, and I love to cook and make things from scratch, like yogurt and bread. And recently it occurred to me that making butter from scratch would Ooh. Be fun to try. And I remember in, like, third grade, there was a class exercise where we had some cream in a jar and passed it around, shaking it, and made butter. And haven't thought about it really since then. But as I've researched it on YouTube, I found a video that said unpasteurized cream is what you'd want to use, and that pasteurized sort of works and ultra-pasteurized doesn't work at all. And I had some pasteurized, or I guess ultra-pasteurized whipping cream in the refrigerator, so went against the advice and thought, well, I'll just try it and see what happens. And as predicted, it didn't really set properly. Mm-hmm. So my husband has managed to find a farmer who sells unpasteurized milk mm-hmm. and therefore probably has unpasteurized cream. So my question for you is, how safe is unpasteurized dairy? Is that something we should even entertain?
That's really interesting. We'll talk about that. I want to talk about the ultra-pasteurization first. I'm not sure precisely what they do, but they change it so that when you have ultra-pasteurized products, they last forever. You know, in your refrigerator. I mean, not literally forever, but a long time. And so you may want to go with something like whipping cream, which is, I do not, the whipping cream I get is not ultra-pasteurized. And you may want to start with something like that. So that's just the first comment. That may be something you want to look at. My second comment is, you weren't brought up in New York City, were you, if they showed how to make butter in class in third grade? Where did you grow up?
Well, actually, I grew up in a suburb of Minneapolis called Edina.
Oh, Edina.
Mm-hmm. Is not known for farming.
It's, no, it's not known for farming. Yeah. Edina. But you are in Minnesota, which is known for farming. Yeah,
sure.
Edina is not high on the farming spectrum. They just wanted to treat, they just wanted to show the Edinans what it was like, what it was like
right.
outside of Edina, where everyone else has cows, kind of like Wisconsin. Unpasteurized milk is a big issue. It's not a small issue. So, you know, the issue is your farmer, you know, your cow, the chances of getting listeria and other problems are probably fairly minimal. Are they zero? They're not zero. So in certain states, they allow farmers to sell unpasteurized milks, whereas other states, they don't. And the reason is it really could be a public health problem. Tuberculosis was spread by unpasteurized milk from cows. Back in the time that I was a kid, one of the things that it said on the milk carton, it said, I remember this, milk from tuberculin-tested cows. And I remember that because I asked my mom, and she said, these cows don't have TB, so you can't get it, because that was one way you could get TB. So it really is an issue.
That's fascinating.
TB is an issue, listeria is an issue, and other bacterial things. So I'm not a proponent of unpasteurized milk. Now, that being said, I'm a family doc in the country, and I have a number of farmers who often drink unpasteurized milk because they get it from their cows and they like it. I've never seen a case of TB in those farmers and others. So the risk probably is pretty minimal. And I would leave it kind of like that. Would I take the risk? Well, I mean, I eat sushi, and I'm really not worried about getting hepatitis A, B, or A or B from sushi or getting, you know, parasites. But the reality is there's a risk of getting parasites from sushi. When it comes to hamburgers, sometimes I eat them fairly rare. Well, you're supposed to eat them all the way through because mm-hmm. there's a risk of E. coli. And, yes, I do drive when the weather is bad in Wisconsin, and there's a little bit of ice on the road, although I have my seatbelt in. That's a risk that I'm willing to take. So you've got a small risk there, and I think as long as you're not doing it all the time, you might want to try it. But I think I'd go to the whipping cream first. So you'd like to be able to make butter. How does your yogurt turn out?
Oh, it turns out great. It's actually really easy once you once you have the equipment to do it. I have an Instant Pot.
Yeah, the Instant Pot is a great way to
do it. Very little work, and you've got a big thing of butter or a big thing of yogurt.
Yeah, when I was much younger, as a wedding gift, we got a salt and yogurt maker, and there were four little glass containers in the salt and yogurt maker, and they basically were just at the right temperature, and we used to make yogurt all the time. And that was when it was actually hard to get really good yogurt. But the Instant Pot is awesome. The Instant Pot is great for doing yogurt. Yeah, I think I would first try whipping cream and see what that does. And then you might want to try the ultra, you know, the unpasteurized milk. But I don't think I would make a habit of it. I definitely would know the farmer you're getting the milk from. That's a critical part. And I would go look at the farm if I were going to have unpasteurized milk and see what the farm looks like. And if the farm looks like
it. Part of it is the sanitation practice of the farm, right?
You bet. It's the whole kit and caboodle. That's the whole
kit
and caboodle.
So no hand dryers is what you want.
You got it. You got it. In
very
the area.
Good, very helpful.
Thanks a lot.
Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
At 800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. 1-800-462-7413. And before we take a quick break now, Zorba, let's fire up another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh, oh.
You're trying to sing?
It's a catchy tune.
That's right. I hum it every night. Every night before I go to sleep.
The following email came to us from a listener named James. Quote, I'd like to comment on an episode where you stated that homeopathic remedies were only placebos. I am 64 years old and have used both supplements and pharmaceutical medicine for most of my life. I believe both can work together, and so do most of the physicians that have treated me. I would also like to remind you that many drugs are based on homeopathic treatments. Aspirin was developed due to the healing effects of willow bark and other plants. Pseudoephedrine is a synthetic form of ephedrine found in Mormon tea. Granted, there are cautions that must be exercised, and as you stated numerous times, the quality of some commercial supplements is questionable, and even with the reputable brand, the time from harvest to consumption can affect the benefits. But to totally dismiss homeopathic treatments as unwarranted, in my opinion, thank you for your program and the information you convey.
Well, that's an interesting letter. I like it. First of all, I said the placebo. I want to talk about that placebo effect. I never said that they were unwarranted. And this actually was a letter that said, talked about homeopathic remedies. And homeopathy is where you take the product and then you dilute it and dilute it and dilute it. So that basically, from what we can observe, there's hardly anything of the product there. The hardly anything we'll put in quotes. In other words, hardly anything. Yeah. Hardly anything that you can find. The fact that some modern medicines, aspirin being 125 years old, so not exactly modern, comes from willow bark, and homeopathy used willow bark just means it has a common ancestors. And it doesn't really give credence to homeopathy. It just says it has a common ancestor and it came at the same time. For the most part, the issue with homeopathy is that there's a belief that it works within it. And I think that activates things within the brain. Now, is there anything there that actually does it in there? From an allopathic scientific point of view, where we actually measure things in the chemistry lab, the answer is no. We can't measure anything in there from our chemistry lab. Now, from a homeopathist lab, they say, sure, there are a couple of atoms of this and an atom of that in there. So it's a function of who you are going to believe, the homeopathy lab or the allopathic lab. That's where it fits in. I think a person who believes in homeopathy, who says that it works and believes in a homeopathy lab and gets a benefit from it is doing exactly the right thing.
It's actually working.
Totally. Yeah. 100%. A person who believes in the scientific viewpoint of what can be measured and can be followed and can be looked at from a scientific way in a double-blind, placebo-controlled way where you can see a difference has that belief system and they follow those medications. And some people do both at the same time. There are a number of things where allopathy does not work well. Chronic pain. Look at what we've done. Opioids. gave people lots of opioids. And as a result of that, we have a number of opioids deaths, huge number of deaths from synthetic opioids, opioids that are illegal, and opioids that are legal. Look at the good we did. Somebody who goes to a homeopathist for chronic pain may hardly be getting anything or nothing that we can measure, but they may be getting pain relief from what they're taking. So they're then taking the right thing because their risk of death is not the same as our risk of death from the drugs we prescribe. That's the way to look at it.
Very, very interesting. Do you disagree with the good doc? Let us know by posting on our Facebook page or by sending us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up, of course, our recipe too, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. With Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our number is 800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, recipe time.
Yes, this is for persimmon arugula salad.
Okay.
And if you can spell persimmon, you can eat it. Now, I bet your mother never looked at a persimmon.
Oh, you win that.
I win that. My mom, too. How about arugula?
Same, same.
Yeah, my mom, too. Now, what did salad mean to your mom?
Lettuce.
What kind of lettuce?
Head lettuce.
Iceberg. That's right.
Yeah.
Head lettuce.
Iceberg lettuce.
The only kind. And what else?
Not tomatoes, because she didn't like it. I didn't like
tomatoes. She didn't like tomatoes.
What? I don't remember what it was. just dressing.
Maybe
I think
nothing else.
Lettuce and dressing.
Actually, it was lettuce with dressing.
Yeah.
Now, you know how many nutrients are in iceberg lettuce?
Let's see. A lot?
You know, it's kind of like, oh, I'm having salad. I'm having iceberg lettuce with high-fat dressing. Is that anything else? Well, persimmon is really interesting. It's not something I ever look at in the grocery store. I don't think about it. It's not on my list. I never showed it to my kids. And yes, it's something that might be really interesting, especially if you never tried anything like this. And you might go this way. And, you know, different kind of salads are kind of good. The reality is, you know, when we think of salad, we should really think of things that are greens, that are not cooked, that are a variety of vegetables that we can eat in a variety of ways that make them tasty. And if you look at salad dressing aisle, it's a huge aisle in the grocery store. Why? Because we like to add different kinds of flavorings to vegetables. That's what we like to do. Mm-hmm. And so this is a good example of sort of thinking outside the box. If you don't eat arugula, if you haven't had a persimmon ever or rarely, it's something you may want to consider. It is simple. I like some recipes, I like to be simple with four or five ingredients. Mm-hmm. This is a good example of that. Not the recipes, I like them because they have more complex taste. So, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, you're ready to go. Start out with the juice from one lemon. Do not use reconstituted juice. You got to have a lemon. Make the juice from a lemon.
Juice from one lemon.
Now, how do you juice your lemons at home? That's right.
Yeah. Moving right along.
That's exactly right. But, you know, if you don't have a juicer, like for oranges and lemons, go get one. It really makes a difference. Fresh lemon juice is really great. 2 tablespoonfuls of olive oil.
2 big tea olive oil.
How's that olive tree growing in your backyard? Does it really make a difference? Can you imagine? Okay, now, if you've got 1 teaspoon of harissa paste. Now, harissa paste is a Mediterranean paste. It's a seasoning paste that you can buy in a lot of gourmet or Asian grocery stores. And, of course, you can buy it on the web. Harissa is H-A-R-I-S-S-A. And you can buy paste. What I really like about the web is there are things you can't get in your local grocery store you can get on the web now.
Now, I'm looking at the recipe. It says that's optional.
That's right.
Is that something that some people like and other people may not?
Well, it's got
like
more seasoning, more spice. It's got more what we would call umami. It has a different taste. It's like some people like to have cilantro and other people don't. It doesn't taste anything like cilantro. But I would definitely, if you've never tried it, get the paste, try it on the stove.
Okay.
Okay. Of course, you're going to use salt and pepper. 2 cups of arugula.
2 cups arugula.
Okay. 1 persimmon sliced.
1 persimmon
sliced.
That's right,
1 persimmon sliced. 1 avocado sliced.
1 avocado.
1 handful of, if you can, you want some shavings from Parmesan or Parmesan oregano. These are when you go to big box stores like Costco and you can get like the shavings of, you know, of these particular cheeses, or you can shave it yourself. Okay.
That's 1 handful.
Mm-hmm. And 1 handful of walnuts chopped.
Handful of walnuts chopped.
Some stuff. Okay, in a medium bowl, add the fresh lemon juice. Do not have anything other than the fresh. Mm-hmm. Olive oil and harissa paste if you have it, which will add a very nice spice to it. Whisk it until smooth. Add a little bit of salt and pepper to taste. That's what you do. Then take arugula, toss it with the dressing you just made until it's evenly coated. Then add the persimmon, gently add the avocado on top, toss it a bit, then put the Parmesan shavings and walnut, toss it again, you're done. That's it. It's mm-hmm. really easy. You've got the crunch of the walnuts. You've got the interesting taste of the persimmon. You've got the fullness of the cheese that's in there with that. You've got lemon juice that adds, you can just picture this, I think. The lemon juice that adds a very mm-hmm. interesting cleanliness to the whole thing. You've got nice, good olive oil. I always have 3 or 4 different kinds of olive oils because they do, some are more robust than that. I would use a robust tasting olive oil. And then if you've got harissa paste on there, you've got a whole other taste to it. It's a fresh, delicious, wonderful salad, good any time of year to wake you up.
Yeah, it sounds kind of good. I don't tend to eat salads.
Uh-huh. But you think it sounds kind of good.
It does,
You
yeah.
know what? If it sounds kind of good to you, yeah. Tom, well, it'll sound kind of good to our
it
listeners.
It has a lot of stuff in that I don't have any idea how it tastes.
That's right. So you're willing
I'm
to try
willing
this.
I'm willing to take willing a try. Yeah.
And if you're willing to try it, all you have to do is come to ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org. Or, of course, through Facebook, pull this recipe out. And you can see some fun pictures of Tom on
oh,
our
boy.
Website.
800-462-7413. That's 800.
Those Tom photos will really excite you, folks.
Oh, yeah. 800-462-7413.
We should have photos from our vacations.
Moving right along to the phones we go, a listener with us in Delavan, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Oh, well, I hate to start by correcting you right away, but Tikkaman soy sauce is in Walworth, Wisconsin, not Delavan.
I mean, oh, not I'm serious. When I talk about Kikkaman soy sauce, I have said Delavan, and it's in Walworth. I stand corrected. It hasn't been recently, but whenever I mention Kikkaman's, because that's my favorite, I have made a mistake. I stand corrected. And you're not even a member of the grammar police. Yeah. You're a member of the geography police, which is a subset of police all along.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Now, to the point.
Yeah.
My dear mother died of osteoporosis at 65 pounds, and that was just being with her at the end was so hard. And I've learned from that to limit carbohydrated drinks, and I want everybody to know that because I don't think all women do know, you know, the yeah. effect that carbonated drinks can have on the body. So
I don't think carbohydrate drinks really make a difference. No, I don't think so. I think the issue with osteoporosis, first of all, we know there's a genetic factor. Your mom had it, you might be at risk. We know
right.
that smoking white women, thin women, are more likely to have osteoporosis than non-smoking hefty women.
Hmm.
I mean, that's husky women, seriously.
Oh.
You know, women who are heavier are less likely to have it. We know that African-American women are very unlikely to have osteoporosis. They don't suffer from it. So we know they do, but they're not as likely. So we know there's a genetic factor in there. There's no evidence that carbonated drinks make a difference. There is
really?
Some evidence. Absolutely no evidence at all. There is evidence that if you consume less than 1,000 milligrams a day of calcium, it puts you at risk for osteoporosis. We know that certain medicines such as prednisone put you at risk for osteoporosis, but no evidence that carbonated drinks make any difference. Not at all.
Okay. Well, you clarified me. All right. Well, I've been taking the 1,200 milligrams of calcium for about 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I have the vitamin D component with it.
Okay.
I understand that you need that for the body to absorb the calcium,
mm-hmm.
right? The D, the vitamin D2?
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. D3.
or D3, I mean. I was going to as in T-O-O. All right. Yeah, yeah, okay. Okay. All right. So my question is, a friend, you know, as we share our current health information, said, oh, you can have too much calcium. It can kind of block up your heart.
No, it doesn't do that. Too much calcium doesn't. The body eliminates it. Too much calcium can block up your bowels. In other words, calcium causes constipation. So you may be bound up from too much calcium. And there's some issues if you're going to take calcium supplements. First of all, calcium from food is absorbed differently than calcium from supplements. So you want to try to get half your calcium from food. Yogurt, if you like yogurt, excellent source of calcium. About 400 milligrams a serving. So yogurt is a great way to get a cheese, dairy products, of course. If you're a vegan or vegetarian, Google online calcium vegetables, and you'll find a whole bunch of them on there. If you're going to take calcium pills, I do not recommend the 1,000 milligram pills because they produce a sudden increase in calcium level in your body, and that actually puts your heart at risk for about 30 to 40 minutes after it's absorbed risk for a heart attack. So I recommend no more than about a 500 milligram tablet, and you take that, let that absorb for an hour or two. You can any time after that, you can take another one, but no more than 500 milligrams at a time of calcium. So the sudden absorption of the calcium chalk, that's basically what you're getting, does not disturb your heart. But get half of that from food and exercise.
Yes. Yes.
Osteoporosis, exercise goes hand in hand.
Yes.
What's your height? What's your weight?
Almost 5'4". I mean, was 5'4". I'm coming down a bit. I'm 73. Weight. Unfortunately, about 160.
Okay,
but from an
osteoporosis point of view, that's okay. And you walk how much? I'm sorry.
Oh, 4 or 5 miles a day.
You're doing great. Oh. You're doing everything.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hey, I have a reason. I could keep my bow. I could keep. Oh, hey, I like what I've learned.
You can keep your soft drinks.
Just the bubblies and the wine is all. But so
you can keep the bubblies in your wine. You're doing great. Keep up the good work, and thanks for your call.
Thank you. All right, yeah.
800-462-7413.
She was so excited she can have bubbly in her wine.
1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. 1-800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, we love it when our listeners post on our Facebook page. So let's get social. Time again for Facebook feedback.
Facebook feedback.
Okay, Zorba, we recently posted an article to Facebook that you wrote that looked at new research that vitamin D and calcium does not help in preventing fractures. Mary in New York reacted to your article by writing the following. What about all the other benefits of vitamin D, especially for us up here in the sun-deprived north? Our doc just told my husband to start taking it, and I've had my children taking it for years after their pediatrician told me it would be beneficial. To my knowledge, it also assists with immunity. National Institutes of Health is still reporting vitamin D does assist in bone health and immunity. I love science. But doctors confuse me.
Yeah, doctors confuse you. That's right. Science is messy. Mm-hmm. Here it is. First you tell us to do this, then you tell us to do that. Mm-hmm. And we're supposed to eat this. This is good for you. Then we're not supposed to eat that. That's very bad. You should eat margarine. Then margarine has trans fats. You ought to go back to butter. Oh, my God. How can you keep anything straight? That's why we have the show.
Yeah.
We have the show to try to keep
vitamin D?
Well, first of all, the article that we discussed was calcium, vitamin D, and actually hip fractures. And it was a major study that basically showed, unfortunately, that taking calcium and vitamin D supplements, there's no evidence it actually prevents hip fractures. Oh, my God, what does that mean? Get your calcium from food. Maybe you can take a calcium supplement. But let's move over in the vitamin D category. It doesn't do anything for hip fractures. There's a lot of research that is upcoming on vitamin D. and it's out. I think there's a vitamin D deficiency. There's no doubt that we don't have as much as we often need. We know that we got rid of rickets in children once we put vitamin D in milk. That was very important. We irradiate milk, so that was a great way to deliver vitamin D and get rid of rickets in the country. The question is, how much do we need for adults? And the NIH is still out to lunch on it. They haven't made a decision yet. There is no downside for taking 1,000 to 2,000 units of vitamin D supplements. Whether or not it actually improves immunity in that dosage remains to be seen. Whether or not it reduces cancer remains to be seen. There's some evidence it might. Whether or not it reduces hip fractures, pretty much so. We really haven't shown that it does very much at all. So if you want to keep on taking the supplement, it's cheap, it's inexpensive, it's easy, doesn't bind you up like calcium.
Can I get a blood test to see whether I have D deficiency?
Well, you can do a blood test to see if you have a vitamin D deficiency level. And a lot of people do that, and then if so, they take more D. But some people just say, I don't care about the blood test. I'm just going to take 2,000 to 3,000 units of vitamin D every day.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. That's what I do.
Yeah.
Let's keep those Facebook comments coming. And you can always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up. Another topic to talk about, our medical Mythbuster segment, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413, our number if you have a question for Zorba. But Zorba, before we get back to the phones, new studies linking cell phone radiation with cancer?
Well, that's been an issue all along. It's sort of a summary of studies that are going on that really always sort of bring up this question. So first of all, before we even start, we have to look around that cell phones have been around for quite a long time now. I mean, they've been around for a couple of decades. Cell phone use has been increased dramatically, right? Dramatically over the last 5, 10, 15 years. Exponential increase in cell phones. In fact, many people use cell phones, have no, quote, landline. Landline wasn't even a term 20 years ago, right? It was your telephone and your cell phone. Now it's your cell phone or your phone, and there's a landline. So in other words, that's become very secondary.
Well, what about the cancer?
Well, the cancer is in laboratory rats, and that's the question. We have laboratory rats that specifically have something, are prone to something called a schwannoma, which is a type of tumor in the brain. And they have discovered that when laboratory rats have cell phones up to their ears, yes, cell phones are used by laboratory rats all the time, when they have a certain amount of electrical impulse into their ears, that they're more likely to get schwannomas. There's no doubt about it. The National Institute of Health has funded a variety of studies that looked at thousands of rats that then have the amount of electricity that essentially a cell phone is delivering to the brain, and have discovered that they are more likely to develop schwannomas. And there are a number of agencies in Europe that have the same question. They found the same thing with laboratory rats. And so the question is what does this mean to humans? Now, the other side of it is, are the cell phone companies in collusion with each other to say, no, no, there is no cancer use from cell phones because we want you to use cell phones all the time and damn the torpedoes, full steam ahead, just like the tobacco people. We're going to suppress this research. I don't actually believe that's the case. I think that some research is good and published and some research isn't. So, yes, this amount of energy in a rat prone to a schwannoma type of tumor does produce more schwannomas. What does that mean for humans? Well, we're not seeing more schwannomas. We're not seeing more cancer. On the other hand, maybe it just hasn't been around for a long enough time.
So what What about if I use, which I don't, if I use the cell phone all the time?
Well, you don't use the cell
hours
phone
a day.
You don't. You're older. You don't use the cell phone, so you are not at risk. You're not the risky person.
Is that a risk for people?
I don't think it's a risk. I think that this is a laboratory animal study. I myself do not believe the data causes anything in humans because we haven't seen the results in humans, and cell phones have been around for a while. I think if you're worried about the risk, use a Bluetooth device and keep the phone away from your ear. That way, you keep the risk down as close to zero as you can.
800-462-7413, our number. 1-800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba, a listener with us in Carthage, Missouri. Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Dr. Zorba. How are you?
Fine. How can we help?
Well, I was diagnosed with something called the alpha-gal allergy. It's an allergy to red meat that they believe is caused by the bite of the Lone Star tick. I kind of had some questions about the different allergy tests. I've been having stomach problems, you know, just upset stomach and bloating and gas, and it seems like it didn't matter what I ate. So I had a food allergy test, blood test for food allergies.
How much did it cost you?
Boy, I don't know. Insurance paid for it.
Okay, so insurance paid for it. Okay, because there are no good blood tests for food allergies. That's why I ask. There's no standardized blood test for food allergies. There are tests that may give you some information, but we do not have a standardized test for any allergy. It's not the way we check for allergies. We do skin tests, then we do food diaries to see. But when it comes to food, we don't have a standardized test. Now, if you're looking at food allergies or food intolerances, if you eat a food and you're getting hives from that food, the question is it from the food or the way it's prepared? So, for instance, when you're brisket, they don't just make brisket. They put seasoning on the brisket. They soak the brisket in something. It may not have anything to do with the brisket. It may be the way the brisket was prepared. That's always a possibility. If you love brisket, you go out and buy brisket, prepare it yourself, see whether or not it makes a difference. People do have food intolerances. There is no doubt about that. And you may be intolerant of red meat or some kinds of red meat. That may be possible. Some people say, you know, I can have this kind of a cut of meat, but I can't have that kind of cut of meat. And if you can't have meat, well, welcome to the vegetarian realm. That's what it is. Or it's poultry and pork and other things. But I don't believe any of these blood tests have any meaning. I think that there are ways, some cases, to rip off the public and actually say this test works, that test works, and I don't believe it because there's no double-blind studies that really show that it's worthwhile. Go to the root of the actual animal or the plant, and that might be the issue.
Okay.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing
Thank you
that.
So much for the call. At 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, time again for our medical MythBuster segment. Today's question comes from a listener named Natalie. She writes, "Hi, Zorba. I just moved to Wisconsin, and I love listening to your show. I was wondering about your thoughts on vitamins. Do we really need them, or are we able to get all the vitamins we need from food? I was also wondering about the multivitamin supplements. I've heard that some vitamins in a multivitamin supplement interact with others and make them ineffective. Is this a myth?"
Well, first of all, Americans have the most expensive urine in the world. That's what someone said once, and they're correct. The Annals of Internal Medicine came out with a great article a number of years ago that showed that people, once they reach, you know, we'll say 25 or 30, don't seem to benefit in terms of reduction of heart disease, stroke, cancer at all by taking multivitamins. The issue with multivitamins that I have is if you go, well, my diet isn't very good, I'm taking vitamins. No, your diet has to be better because Mother Nature really has all the vitamins. And if it's an excuse not to eat well, you're wrong. A Mediterranean diet with plentiful fruits and vegetables are the way to go. Now, is there something wrong with taking a vitamin? No. Multivitamin, 100% of all the vitamins, USP, from a brand in the store, Walgreens, CVS, Target, Walmart, you know that they're going to stand behind their brand, Costco. That's the multivitamin to get good inexpensive. Do they interact with one another in a bad way? Not at all. The colloidal mineral vitamin supplement person who made millions and millions of dollars said, my vitamins don't interact, the other vitamins do. Not at all. That was simply showmanship, charlatanism, and P.T. Barnumism. The answer is, if you want to take a multivitamin, it costs 10 or 12 bucks a year if you buy the house brand. Cheap and inexpensive, but don't forget to eat the way your mama said, the Mediterranean diet, unless your mama said just meat and potatoes.
Have a potential myth for Zorba? Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Back to the phones in Zorba at 800-462-7413. A listener now in Gatlinburg, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Okay, how can we help?
Well, for the past few years, I've had these random chest pains, and I honestly don't know what they are. For the longest time, I would have maybe one or two maybe every month or so. And it would be right about my fifth or sixth rib on the left-hand side. It was a very sharp pain. It would kind of move down and then move over to the left of my chest and go away. And I just dealt with it. But then in the past 5 or 6 months, they've become a lot more frequent. I would have anywhere from 10 to 15 in a month. It started to get very annoying, very painful, so I went to a cardiologist. He had me do an EKG, stress test, wore a heart monitor. He said, oh, your heart's as fit as a fiddle. We don't know what's wrong with you. So I had a second opinion, went to another cardiologist. They said the exact same thing. I've been to several other doctors. One of them said it might be possible nerve damage. A few years ago, I'd hurt my back pretty bad. But I don't know what to do, and it's really, really annoying.
Yeah, I bet it is annoying. So let's start with the cardiologist. They put you on a treadmill, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you decided you didn't believe the first one, so you decided to go to a second one?
Correct.
Well, not bad. Two opinions. And your insurance paid for both?
Yes, sir, they did, which I'm very thankful for.
Good. That's exactly right. So you've had that. You've had an echocardiogram also to look at your heart?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So you've had the workup. Did you have a catheterization, by the way? Did they go that far?
No, sir, I don't believe they did.
Okay. But you would know that. But you've had a stress test, you've had that. How old are you?
I am only 23.
Only 23. Okay, so you don't need, the chances that you actually need a stress test are there. When does your chest pain bother you?
Honestly, it just hurts at totally random times. I can be in the kitchen washing the dishes.
Huh.
I can be sitting down reading a book. I can be attempting to exercise because I have very poor lungs, and I've athletically induced asthma, so I can't run very far, but it can just happen at any time.
What are you on for your asthma?
I'm currently taking Breo for my asthma and a albuterol inhaler.
Okay. Now, asthma, people with asthma can have chest pain.
Okay.
I wonder if it's from your asthma. Are you wheezing at all when you exercise?
Whenever I do exercise, I will wheeze a little bit, but I've very rarely actually had one of those pains during my exercise. I've had maybe 4 or 5 of them.
You know, the first place I would look at, since you've had a cardiac workup, you're 23. You're a smoker or a non-smoker?
God, no. I cannot smoke.
Good. Just checking. There are people who still smoke regardless of that. So the first place I would look with what you have is I would look and see whether or not you need to have your asthma medications increased. That's the first thing I would do, because people with asthma have chest pain all over the place, and they may wheeze, they may not wheeze, but it's been my experience that people with asthma complain about chest pain intermittently. So since you've had the cardiac workup, go back to your asthma person who's taking care of your asthma. Say, look, I want to be on a higher dose of steroid medications. I want to be on the highest dose I can to see if this chest pain goes away. That would be number one, because you've got asthma, you've got something. Number two. Once I got my asthma totally under control, I would begin to exercise. This may be muscular, it may be ligamentous, it may be from the nerves around your chest, but often exercise ameliorates chest pain that comes from soft tissue around the bones, ligaments, and muscles. And so exercise may actually be, if it's, you know, got to get the asthma under control first, might be your answer to this. When I jog, when I exercise, I recently started to decided that I was going to run a 5K, and I'm going to start to jog again. I haven't jogged in years. I immediately have some chest discomfort. I know it's not cardiac because I recently went up, you know, a while ago I went up 3,000 feet when I was in India in the Himalayas, and I had no chest pain at all. If I was going to get chest pain, it would be going up 3,000 feet on a little hike. And I get, but I get it when I run, and it usually lasts for about a month after I start running. Why is it? I have no idea. Ligaments, muscles, nerves. So you got to get your asthma under control, and then you've got to start to exercise in an aerobic way. Those are the two things. The chances of this being cardiac, pretty close to zero.
Okay. All righty. Well, I thank you so much.
Sure.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for your call. Thanks a lot. And before we head out, Zorba, let's tackle a listener email. This one came to us from Catherine. Dear Zorba, I have a 6-year-old child with ADHD. He's having a hard time in school focusing. My husband and I are unsure about putting him on drugs for it. What are the pros and cons for Adderall? Any information would be helpful to us. Thank you.
Well, the first thing you want to do is you want to sit down with your provider, be it a nurse practitioner, PA, or a doctor, and discuss the pros and the cons. That's kind of number one. You also want to discuss it anywhere there's a school system because you want to get your child evaluated. Like, really, will this drug possibly be helpful? I mean, this is the way you prospect it. There are pros and cons to the drugs. Kids can lose weight or not gain weight. It's a drug that they're on. That can be the con. That's not good. It can change their personality. Sometimes it changes them for the better. Usually it does. Once again, on the other hand, they may be able to sit in school, learn, and have confidence in their ability. So this is where there is no absolute. The other thing is you do a trial with one drug or another. There's Adderall, there's Ritalin, there are a variety, Vyvanse is another drug. There are a variety of drugs that we try, and this is where you've got to sit down with a provider who's going to take the time and try it out. So there's no absolute one way or the other. The other thing is you want to go to the web, go to sites like the Mayo Clinic, Johns Hopkins, or other sites to actually look at the pros and cons. So when you go in for the discussion, you've got some idea of what the side effects of the medications are. This is something where, as a parent, you've got to take the time to make the decision for your child's best interest. Mm.
Have a healthy living question for Zorba? He's always happy to help. Just post it to our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
For more Zorba Pastor on Your Health, including episodes, recipes, and tips mentioned on the program, visit ZorbaPastor.org. This year, we're celebrating the show's 25th anniversary, and we want to hear from you. How has Zorba helped you out? What have you learned from the show over the years? Leave us a message at 800-462-7413.